From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
That's right. You know what time it is when you hear that music. It is time for Current Sports. As always, I am the man behind the mic, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for you all. Today, we will talk about Marcus Mariota deciding to take his talents to the NFL and forgo his final year of college football eligibility. How ready is Mariota and where should he go in this year's upcoming NFL draft? We'll also talk about the Detroit Pistons as they fall to the New Orleans Pelicans last night in the Palace of Auburn Hills. And also the Detroit Red Wings are back in action against St. Louis. So we'll talk about both of those teams as well as bring you Throwback Thursday, what happened on this Thursday in sports history, and we'll be giving you a sneak peek of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Okemos High School Athletic Director Ira Childress. It was a fantastic time last night. We'll have all of that and so much more on the show, as well as taking your calls. But let's start the show like we always do, folks. Here we go with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this January 15th. All right, folks, let's start with the MSU women's basketball team. Michigan State returns home to play four of its next five games at the friendly confines of the Breslin Center to take on Illinois tonight at 7 p.m. Now, the game is available on Big Ten to Go. MSU is 8-8 overall, 0-5 in Big Ten play. Yes, folks, they are still searching for that first conference win, while Illinois is 11-5 overall and 2-2 in league action. Again, Illinois now has won two of its last three games, including a 73-61 win over then number 17 Iowa back on January 8th. All right, a quick update concerning the health of the MSU men's basketball team. Now, Denzel Valentine has an ulcer in his throat. But folks, hey, that sounds pretty bad, but it's not, okay? Tom Izzo actually says that Denzel Valentine is 90% healthy right now. Matt Costello, who had mono last season, said that after the Northwestern game, he didn't think it was a recurrence of that illness, and he was right. So Costello looks to be fine as well. Now the team gets ready for some possible payback against Maryland on the road this Saturday. That's the same team that beat the Spartans to start conference play. All right, the Detroit Pistons again. The New Orleans Pelicans brought the hot Detroit Pistons back to earth. The Pistons came in having won 9 of 10, but were never competitive with the Pelicans. Anthony Davis, how good has he been this year, huh? He had 27 points, 10 rebounds as the Pelicans beat the Pistons 105-94 on Wednesday night. Brandon Jennings, BJ, he poured in 19 for the Pistons, but his shooting was not that great. He went 14 of 25. Greg Monroe, 16 points and 8 rebounds. He was the only other starter to reach double figures. Next up, Pistons visit the Pacers on Friday. All right, coming off a win to the Buffalo Sabres, the Detroit Red Wings try to ride that momentum tonight as they take on the St. Louis Blues on the road. Now, the Blues are currently riding a 5-game win streak. Puck drop is at 8 p.m. in the Scott Trade Center. After losing to the Ohio State Buckeyes in a national championship 3 days ago, Marcus Mariota has entered his name in for the NFL draft. Now, he is the Heisman Trophy winner and has a record of 105 touchdowns and only 14 INTs. And yesterday, he made it official, but there are questions about where he will go and will he be good enough to play at the next level. We'll debate about that in just a sec. Stay tuned. All right, folks. Well, shocking news out of the NFL. The Indianapolis Colts linebacker Josh McNary has been charged with rape. Yeah, now, yeah, this is an interesting story, folks. The victim claimed to have been drugged. Now, McNamara's attorney has denied all the allegations of the rape case. The Colts have asked the commissioner, Roger Goodell, to place McNary on the commissioner's exempt list immediately. So we'll keep you updated as the as that story develops in the coming days. All right, in PGA news, along with Tiger Woods soon making his return, another big name will be missing the Pebble Beach tournament this weekend. Now, lefty Phil Mickelson shot plus 11. Man, that sounds like Alex's scorecard. And did not make the cut to compete in the first round. Now, Mickelson was going to attempt to win back-to-back titles at Pebble Beach for the first time in golf history, but he misses the cut for his third time total in his career. All right, Tom Caldwell and Kevin Jorgensen, spent 19 days scaling the El Capitan. Yes, the duo climbed this 3,000-foot wall freely, meaning they were not attached to any cords or harnesses. I mean, talk about scary, folks. Now, they said the best time to scale the granite wall was during the late afternoon and evening so that their skin would not become sweaty and the soles of their shoes would stay hard. Now, they are the first to complete this task, and they planned on tackling this dangerous endeavor for the last 7 years. I mean, how scary would that be? I mean, you're up on a rock, you have no support, no harness to catch it if you decide to slip and fall. I mean, that's scary stuff. Hats off to him, though. Couldn't be me. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in right now and share your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Hey, let's start the show. All right. Well, I tell you what, it is my favorite time of the day where I get to, host Current Sports. I'm so glad for each and every one of our listeners out there who tune in each and every day. Folks, we've got a hot show in store for you. Again, each and every Thursday, we love to give you guys sort of a sneak peek preview into Thursday night's Current Sports TV guests. Now, last night, we tape on Wednesday night, so Ira Childress, the Okemos High School Athletic Director, joined me inside of the WKAR TV studios for an incredible sit-down. I mean, Ira talked about everything from his career working with the NFL to the NCAA to his time with, consulting college athletes with Ira Childress Consulting Firm. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, this man has done a lot of things in the sports industry, and a lot of people may not know that Ira was actually even a sports broadcaster at one point. That's right. He used to host a very cool radio show. He got to cover the Super Bowl, talk to athletes from the likes of Emmitt Smith and so on and so forth. I mean, very cool guy with an interesting background and story to tell. So you do not want to miss that. But again, we like to treat you guys each and every Thursday by giving you a sneak peek of that interview. You'll get to hear it during our last segment of the show today. You want to stay tuned for that. And yes, it's Thursday. Each and every Thursday, folks, we love to hop into our Current Sports time machine and take a look at what happened on this particular day in sports. That's right. We'll have our Throwback Thursday segment for you. But first, I want to remind you all, speaking of Current Sports TV guests, next week you can start signing up online right now. Again, simply just go to WKR.org. But next week I'll be sitting down with a living legend in the world of high school sports. I mean, it was so fantastic. After I got done taping the last night's Current Sports TV, went up to my office and actually shot him a call to confirm that he would be in the house next week, Wednesday night. And he said, yeah, no problem. He was just a kind guy, a classy guy. I sat on the phone with him for about 20 minutes last night. But his name is Bob Anderson. I'm sure that's a name that probably rings a bell in the minds of many of you out there, seeing as though Bob Anderson has been coaching the game of basketball for almost 40 years, folks. I believe 37 to be exact. He's the head coach, head girls basketball coach over at Ithaca High School. He's coached boys and girls basketball, and he recently just set the Michigan state record for most high school basketball games coached by anybody in the history of the game. Can you believe that, folks? He just recently went over 1,120 games coached. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's just mind-boggling when you sit back and think about that number. So Bob is going to join me to sit down again next week Wednesday at 6 p.m. if you want to be in the house for that one. Go to WKAR.org, sign up online for free, and then afterwards you get to meet Bob, take some pictures with Bob, hey, even meet me for that matter. So it's going to be a great time. Again, WKAR.org for that one. And then the following week, I'm also excited because the following week after we have Bob in the house, we will have Keon Gee in the house. Now, does that name ring a bell? Well, maybe not, because he's a young kid who has certainly been taking the boxing world by storm. He just actually became the Silver Gloves champion, state champion, in the world of youth boxing. Can you believe that? I mean, the kid's like 9 years old and just giving it to people. I mean, he's got a future in this sport. I'll be sitting down with him. Also, trainer Ali Easley, who's been a great friend of Current Sports. He's been on multiple times to talk about boxing. We even did an incredible feature out at Crown Boxing near downtown Lansing. So they'll be in the house. And also, you know, I tell you what, it's like it feels like Christmas all over again. The week after that, Susie Merchant, the head women's basketball coach for the MSU women's basketball team, of course, she should be in the house as well. So, again, folks, if you want to be a part of any of those episodes, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online, and then it's just a matter of showing up. Exciting times here at WKAR. I gotta love that. All right, well, to start the show, before I do, I want to invite the man behind the glass, Alex. My apologies for taking a shot at your golf game. Welcome to the show. How you doing, my man?
Doing well. Shots fired. I understand that. That will be the theme of today. But also, shots fired in the MLS draft. We got some breaking news. Michigan State's very own Jay Chapman will be playing for Toronto FC. And Fatai Alashe drafted number 4 overall. Four overall in the MLS draft. So pretty good news today for Michigan State soccer.
That is big news. And, of course, we had on Brooks Lambeer, who is the Impact sports writer for the MSU men's and women's teams, and he gave us an entire preview of today's draft. And I can't believe this. So that's breaking news. That just happened then, huh? Wow. Fatai Alashe being taken number 4 overall in this year's draft. That's unbelievable. I mean, the kid is unbelievable. So how about that? That's fantastic news, and we certainly wish them the best. I mean, that's great stuff. Well, thanks a lot for bringing that to us, Alex.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's start the show by talking about, I want to talk about Marcus Mariota, because he seems to be the topic of discussion everywhere right now. And briefly, we just want to get your thoughts, and those out there, again, our phone lines are open. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, we'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., folks. But again, Marcus Mariota has decided to forego his final year of college football eligibility and take his talents to the NFL. Now, of course, he just lost to the Ohio State Buckeyes in the national championship just three days ago, but he is the Heisman Trophy winner. Again, a record of 105 touchdowns, only 14 INTs. And again, yesterday he made it official. So first off, Alex, are you surprised that Marcus decided to make this move? And how successful do you think he will be in the league?
Absolutely not. I'm not surprised at all. They were debating on, I think it was First Take or something. They were debating if Marcus Mariota was one of the best college quarterbacks of all time. Someone with that much hype behind him, you can't really be surprised that he wants to come out of the draft. Now, the real question is, where will he go? A Tampa Bay team that I would argue needs more help on the defensive side of the ball may be looking to get a defensive player first, but I mean, is he a number one overall pick? I'm not so sold on it. I think it depends on who that number one team is and if they need a quarterback. Is Tampa set on Josh McCown to be their QB? Probably not. Probably not, too. So it looks like, you know, they have two QBs on their roster. It probably looks like it's a safe bet for Mariota to go there because that's a need of theirs. But unless they think the defensive side of the ball, there's a bigger need, then maybe they'll go there. I think it really comes down to team needs and obviously that star power potential. Now, Dominican Sue, the Lions, you know, do they need a defensive tackle that badly? They did, but they had some talent on their roster at the position. It wasn't a glaring need. Same when they drafted all those receivers in the past. Did the Lions need all those wide receivers? Of course not. But they thought that the player that was on the board at the time had that much talent overall. Does Mariota have that much talent? Does he blow off the charts? I think he does.
He does, yeah.
He does. So that's why I think, you know, he's probably a number one or number two overall pick.
Yeah, certainly. I think he's a number one or number two overall pick as well. But there is an asterisk that comes in this conversation because, you know what, I actually tweeted out a pretty interesting graphic, actually, that was put out by SportsCenter yesterday upon hearing that Marcus Mariota would be taking his talents to the NFL. And just to rattle off these numbers, and these are numbers that you really can't ignore because I always say, and even when it, you, and Alex, you know how much I hate recruiting. I don't put too much harp on it because I've seen, you know, four-star, five-star recruits come out of high school, come to college, and their games are just don't totally match.
Some of them are duds.
Yeah, some of them are duds. And I tell you what, the same proves true when you talk about making the leap from college to the pros, no matter what sport you're talking about. Did you know, and I'm just going to rattle off some stats here, from the QBs right now that have won the Heisman Trophy who are still currently in the NFL. I just want to rattle off some numbers. You got Carson Palmer, who is 70-73 in his career. Then I'll move on now to Sam Bradford. He's 18-30 with one tie. Then you have Cam Newton, who is the only QB on this list to have won a playoff game, who's 30-31-1. Robert Griffin III, we know about the struggles he's had, other than probably that rookie campaign, but he's 14-21. And then last but certainly not least, you got Johnny Football, who is 0-2 in the NFL. I tell you what, I do think Marcus Mariota, when you talk about pure raw talent, he has it. And, you know, when you make that transition, one of the biggest things that you have to have if you're going to make that leap to the NFL is size. Marcus Mariota has done a great job of hitting that weight room and getting bigger and stronger every single year he's been in the game. He has great football instincts. He's got great football IQ. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's shown that he can extend plays. He's great at improvising, getting out of the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield. He's a master at going through his progressions. But one of the biggest things for me that I really evaluated when looking at Marcus Mariota's game last night when looking at just a lot of film is that Marcus Mariota, one of the biggest knocks on him, and you'll hear this echoed by analysts like, you know, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay and so on and so forth, is I really doubt right now how accurate he is when making throws and anticipating routes going throughout the process. Now, I'll tell you what, Jameis Winston is one of the best in the game at doing it. Anticipating when a route is going to be complete for a receiver and hitting the ball right on the button for that receiver to catch it right between the numbers. Marcus Mariota, again, he's an improviser. Marcus Mariota is at his best when he gets out of the pocket, keeps those eyes downfield, and extends plays in that matter, whether it be on the ground or on the run, period, point blank, period. So can he stay in the pocket and deliver throws when completing routes to receivers? That's always been a knock on Marcus. I think with time, he will get better with that. So I think, ideally, I think he will go number one or two overall, without a doubt, because he's a great mix of size, raw talent, and just great intangibles as a quarterback. But I do think he needs time to develop at the next level in the NFL. I don't think he's a guy who's going to come in and start right away. You got to give him some time to groom him, kind of like an Aaron Rodgers. Give him one or two years, and then we can start talking about Marcus Mariota being a legitimate threat in the NFL.
Right. I know it's a concern in regard to if he's going to go number one or number two, but let's be real. Every quarterback that comes out of college in the NFL draft has a knock to him. The draft is notorious for finding little nitpicky things that isn't quite elite or quite expert. So to knock a Mariota for that, I see that. But again, with Matthew Stafford, there was issues with Stafford would be able to run out of the pocket when he was drafted. Remember, that was the whole thing with Stafford. He was more of too much of a pocket guy. How would he react with pressure? How can he really navigate the field? He's more of a typical pro-style quarterback. You know, how will he manage that? So again, it really depends year by year. I think that always comes out, and it's nothing really that new now.
But you know what is new? You're starting to see a trend here, I think. I think, you know, a lot of QBs, or just players in general, in the college game, you know, those who have won Heismans and have held all of these records. I mean, how many times have we seen those type of guys fail at the next level. So we've seen that. So I think that's why that's a legitimate conversation to have with Marcus, and that's why those little things that he doesn't do perfect are so amplified, because that may be the reason why right. his game might not transition.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's always a legitimate conversation to have. Is the hype real? Always. Now,
sure.
Jameis Winston is another guy, because I think, for me, Alex, if I had to pick right now, I think you could go 2-1 or 1-2 with both of these guys when comparing Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. The biggest question and one of the discussions that we've always had on this show is whether or not Jameis Winston's off-the-field issues are so glaring that they should knock him down to maybe pick number 10 or 15, maybe even 20. How big and how concerned would you be as an NFL GM, executive, or coach that Jameis Winston has had some pretty laughable and pretty glaring off-the-field issues throughout his college career?
Very concerned. I mean, look at the NFL right now. Name one or two good quarterbacks that have come out of college that had off-the-field issues in college that are successful. There aren't many. I'd maybe even argue maybe one or two. Look at the last big name that had issues at college and coming out. Look at Russell on Oakland, number one overall, you know, big prototypical quarterback, Heisman candidate, national championship, had all this hype, still had some off-the-field issues, didn't really pan out. So when you're talking about a top first-round quarterback with off-the-field issues, we haven't seen that in a while, have we?
No,
we haven't.
From the college level going to the pros, I mean, I haven't seen
that.
I'd
say Russell. I'd say Jamarcus Russell was the last one.
Yeah, or Johnny Football. I mean, during his whole thing, you know, with the partying and
but
so
again,
on and so forth. But
Johnny Football, has he panned out? Not
right.
really.
Right.
And he also dropped in the first round. So I think that's a very big issue here.
But I think when you talk about the comparison with Johnny Football, though, I think that a lot of other factors weigh in with Johnny Football. I mean, I honestly think that Jameis Winston is a better quarterback than Johnny Football was, just because of the way that Winston can read the field. His size is big. I mean, Johnny Football, I mean, he gets knocked a lot because he's not that tall.
Look at Russell Wilson, the size matters.
But he's like the pick of the litter. I mean, that's like a needle in a haystack type of a guy. Russell Wilson just raw talent.
Drew Brees.
But he's not a – Drew Brees' game isn't like a Russell Wilson's, though. I mean, Russell Wilson is more mobile. I would say that Drew Brees can read – I don't even know, because there's nothing really. Can you even name anything really that Russell Wilson does bad as a quarterback? I mean, he's so phenomenal. I mean, Russell Wilson can he has a cannon for an arm. He's very mobile. His intangibles are there. With Drew Brees, he's not that mobile. You know what I mean? Russell Wilson is kind of a different breed of quarterback. He kind of reminds me, his game is sort of like, you know, a Brett Favre mixed with kind of a Colin Kaepernick with the way he's able to get out of pocket. So, I don't know. It's just kind of a different beast that we're talking about overall. But as far as Winston go, I think that he will and he can. His ceiling is very, very high for how good he can be in the league. But again, when you talk about those off-the-field issues, I mean, we talked about when he had that outburst in the student union, when he jumps on the table and yells out those profanities that got a lot of press, and he was, you know, he had to sit out the following game that week. When that happened, it was a product of the coaching staff at Florida and the administration at Florida State enabling this nonsense, and it finally coming into an eclipse, if you will. Again, Jameis Winston has had numerous problems and had numerous problems at Florida State, but he was never punished for it until that final incident at the student union. I do think that in the end, when you talk about the pros, talent trumps everything. His raw talent will supersede those off-the-field issues that he has, because there are a lot of desperate franchises out there right now that want a game-changer right now and believe that once this kid enters their program and enters their facility, that they can do a 180 and teach this kid how to handle themselves in a representation that represents that team's brand in a way that's suitable. They believe that they can change Jameis Winston around, and I do think there are franchises that believe that, and that is why Jameis Winston will be a number one or number two overall pick in the draft. I don't think that will hurt him, as much as a lot of people out there think. So, I don't know. What do you think, folks? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Briefly, Alex, before we hit our first break, I want to talk about the Detroit Red Wings. Now, they are coming off a win to the Buffalo Sabres. The Red Wings, again, try to ride that momentum tonight as they take on the St. Louis Blues on the road. The Blues are currently riding, and they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now, riding a 5-game win streak. You know, it's really interesting. I don't think we had this conversation yet, Alex, but when talking about the Red Wings' absence of now Jimmy Howard, who has been a stud goalie for the Wings for quite some time now. Now, Peter Mrazek now comes in and replaces Jimmy Howard. And the question is, how well can he hold down the fort throughout the year? Now, if you look at it, there was also another injury. If you remember, Gustafsson got injured as well. During that point, he went 5-2-1 with a 2.31 goal against average in his first seven starts and one relief appearance after that injury. Now, you know, it's interesting because Peter is a guy, when looking at his overall mentality as a goalie, I mean, he's very competitive. And, you know, he's a guy who is such a hard worker. And, again, he's had some outstanding outings as a Detroit Red Wings goalie. Now, going against the St. Louis team, again, which has outscored his opponents 21-18 during this whole five-game win streak, they also kind of have a goaltender dilemma of their own. Now, the Blues have continued winning despite, Jack Allen, who was sent to the AHL on January 2nd earlier this month after struggling, leaving the crease to Brian Elliott, who returned on December 30th after missing 14 games with a sprained knee. And if you look at these, again, if you look at this win streak, again, 21-18 outscoring margin is not that great. You're starting to see that, you know, with this goaltender dilemma that St. Louis is having, opponents have been able to score on them, but St. Louis has been so outstanding offensively that has outweighed that end of the floor defensively for him. So it's interesting because I think, you know, this is a great matchup for the Wings, again, who are sixth place in the Eastern Conference. St. Louis is fourth in the West, one of the West's best teams. What do you think happens tonight, Alex?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. But look, the theme of tonight is goaltending. Like you said, Peter Mrazek stepping in for Howard. How about the story that's really ignored? Martin Brodeur, Al, as you know, on the Blues now. He has a week of absence. He's on his way out to retirement. He's kind of going out as the third goalie, kind of a tarnished legacy to Martin Brodeur. So for me, the theme here is goaltending. It's got to be a little awkward if you're a Blues goaltender right now, and you have Martin Brodeur, the legend, the first ballot Hall of Famer,
yeah,
taking a leave of absence, and also is the number three goalie, and also you got Howard there on the bench. So yeah, for me, it's going to be goaltending, and I think that the Blues are riding hot. I think the Wings might have some trouble. Yeah, they played the Sabres, but again, the Sabres, not as much offensive prowess as the Blues. So I think that tonight, the Wings defensively are going to have a really tough matchup with that high-powered Blues offense.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good game that comes down to the wire. In the end, I'm going to pick St. Louis to win that game, though. All right, and the Detroit Pistons, folks. New Orleans Pelicans brought the hot Detroit Pistons back down to earth. Again, the Pistons came in having won 9 of 10, but we're really never competitive in this game with New Orleans, and that's something that we haven't seen throughout this hot streak for the Pistons. Even when they've gotten down and lost one or two games, I tell you what, they've still managed to be competitive. Going back to the Atlanta Hawks game, I mean, they were down double digits in that game and then came back to bring it within three and had a chance to tie with just seconds left in the game. I think last night we kind of saw the Pistons sort of take a step back into looking at how they look when they had that 5-23 stretch.
I don't know about that. I would just say it just wasn't their night. Defensively, yeah, they were a little bit lackluster from what I saw in two quarters. But overall, their shots just weren't falling. And I think, yeah, think about it. This is their second, what are they, like 13-2 over the last 15 or something like that? I mean, this is their second loss since they got rid of Josh Smith.
Right.
So I think overall, you can't win them all.
Yeah, you can't.
I think you just got to kind of take this one with a grain of salt. Just kind of wait and see what happens.
Exactly. Like I always say, an NBA season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And again, you're going to have nights where you just don't have it. And, you know, Brandon Jennings, he had 19 for the Pistons. He went 14, 14-25, excuse me. And Greg Monroe had 16 points, 8 rebounds, was the only other starter to reach double figures. I mean, right now, I think right now the Pistons defensively, and especially when you talk about Anthony Davis, I mean, he is such a juggernaut in the NBA right now. I mean, he can take you inside. He can take you outside. He's such a big body. He's a tough guard for anyone in the league. And the Pistons have to come when they face superstars. And I'm dubbing Anthony Davis as a superstar in the NBA. They have to elevate their game to a place where defensively, you have to be on your P's and Q's. And I don't think defensively the Pistons, where they have been in this past stretch. So we'll see. Time to panic? No, not at all.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I really like Stan Van Gundy's comments last night when he talked about the playoffs, and he said, hey, We are a team that started 5-23. We have a long, 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 long season ahead of us before we even start thinking about making the playoffs. So, got to take it game by game. The Pistons are just fine. Again, you're going to have games like that from time
to
time.
And hey, look, one more thing, Al. Look at it this way. Most of the wins they've had over this stretch have been from come from behind wins. They're at halftime, they're down 20. You know, they're cutting the lead. As you know, most of the times they've come back, they've been 10-0 runs, 13-0 runs, 15-3 runs.
And that comes from hot shooting. Yeah.
It comes from hot shooting, and it comes from momentum.
Right.
Several times in the third quarter, the Pistons cut within 17, within 15. The Kyle Singler turnover, if you remember, Al, if you watch this, on the fast break, it was a 3-on-1. He tries like a no-look pass. The trailer kind of stopped on the way to the hoop. New Orleans comes back down the floor and hits a three. The momentum just went silent. They took a timeout right after. You could sense that momentum just wasn't there. So they just couldn't really get a good break momentum-wise. They couldn't really ride a momentum streak. I think it really comes with that when they're coming from behind. And they just didn't have it overall.
All right, well, we'll see if they can get back on a winning track this Friday when they visit the Indiana Pacers. All right, folks, again, if you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything that we talk about here on the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, we will take a look at what happened in sports history on this day, January 15th. That's right, folks. Throwback Thursday is right around the corner. Pop, take us out, my man. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, January 15th. Hopefully, it's a great one for all of you out there. Again, in each and every Thursday, we love to bring Throwback Thursday to you, and we also play some throwback music that I guess we're each and out of the breaks. Every break, in and out of the breaks, we are playing a particular artist today, and that is Tupac. How about that? And that song was actually a mix between, I believe, Michael Jackson's Liberian Girl and Pac remixing that. So rest in peace, Tupac, man. One of the greatest to ever do it in the game of hip-hop. All right. Well, folks, also, if you haven't seen this play, again, I went out on Tuesday and shot the Lansing Everett in East Lansing Boys High School game. And there was a dunk that has been getting a lot of press from around this area, folks. And it was actually, the play was made by Mikael Miles, who is a fantastic player for Steve Finnemore's team. And again, you can check it out on WKAR.org. Just go to the Current Sports Radio page, scroll down, and you'll see it there. This video is one of the more highly viewed videos that we've ever had here on Current Sports. It's actually been viewed over 7,000 times. Can you believe that? 7,000 times this video has been viewed, folks. The dunk takes place actually at the 3:40 mark of the video, where Mikael just kind of just takes off off of both legs and delivers a thunderous two-handed slam over a Lansing Everett player, and it gets everybody just going crazy. So, and Steve actually shot me a call, head coach of the East Lansing boys basketball team. He shot me a call before my TV show yesterday, and he told me that he showed it to his entire team yesterday during practice, and they just went absolutely nuts. So if you haven't seen that video, again, it's on WKR.org as well. I have a quick tweet here to read. Again, you can also tweet us here at Current Sports if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about. At Al Martin WKR is my Twitter handle, and you can simply go to Facebook.com/currentsports and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Tom Shanahan, who's a great friend of the show as well, he just wanted to talk about Cardale Jones, who of course led the Ohio State Buckeyes to that national championship 3 days ago. He said, quote, good reason for Cardale Jones to leave and fall to a team with a winning record, and time to groom him a bit underneath an aging star. So he believes that Cardale Jones should take his talents to the NFL and not be in this three-headed horse race between JT Barrett and Braxton Miller next year for Ohio State. Interesting comment there. I do think that Cardale should also take the money because, again, when you talk about competing with two other quarterbacks who have shown that they can win games, I mean, my goodness, that's tough. That is tough. Cardale, I mean, he has the size. He has the intangibles. Why not? Why not go after the money, right? Again, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Folks, it is time for Throwback Thursday. Let's hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at what happened on this Thursday, or this day, excuse me, in sports.
That the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long. Eisenman, back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Goal! And there it goes! You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
Ah, many historic moments in that montage. Folks, it's time for Throwback Thursday again, where we take a look at what has happened on this particular day in sports history. Well, let's start with 1892 in Springfield, Massachusetts. The rules of basketball by James Naismith were printed in the Triangle newspaper. So on this day, again, back in 1892, this is the day where the rules of basketball were implemented. Now, of course, many have been added and many modified in that same conversation, but this is when the magic started to happen and where my favorite sport really started to become birthed. So how about that? 1892, shout out to Dr. James Naismith, the inventor of basketball. All right, 1934, the Babe.
I'll never forget, it was a tough series. Both clubs riding each other, doing everything to get each other's goat. Well, I had this one particular time when I went to bat, Charlie Root was pitching, and the first pitch ball was a call strike. Well, I thought it was outside and didn't like it very much. Well, I didn't like that one either, so I let it go by. Well, I stepped out of the box, and by that time, they were over there going crazy. Well, I looked down at center field, and I tore it. I said, I'm going to hit the next pitch ball right past the flag pole. Well, good Lord, it must have been with
me. How about that? Babe Ruth, folks. Again, Babe Ruth actually signed a contract back in 1934 for $35,000 on this day. Now, that what you just heard was a call of Babe Ruth actually calling that he would hit a home run and then doing so. I mean, how crazy is that? I mean, Babe was so good. Again, in this day in sports, he signed a contract for $35,000, which at that time, folks, that was a lot of moolah. We're talking about Jay-Z money there. Bill Gates moolah at that time, folks. So shout out to the Babe. All right. In 1942, U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt gave baseball the approval to play despite World War II. He encouraged night games so that war workers could attend. How about that? It took place in 1942. In 1958, the New York Yankees announced that they would televise 140 games in the 1958 season. 1967, the first National Football League Super Bowl was played. On this day, the first Super Bowl ever, the Green Bay Packers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs of the American Football League with a final score of 35-10. The game was televised, by both CBS and NBC and was not a sellout. But hey, my oh my, how things have changed. You can't even get a ticket for the Super Bowl a year in advance. Again, the first Super Bowl played on this day. All right, 1968, Bill Masterson of the Minnesota North Stars. He died of a brain injury that he had suffered 2 days earlier in a game against the Oakland Seals. Now, he was the first casualty ever in the NHL. Oh, that's sad news on this day. All right, 1978. Let's see here. This took place if my laptop continues to work. All right, there we go. My goodness. Technology sometimes, folks. All right, the Super Bowl was played indoors for the first time. The game was played at the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The Dallas Cowboys defeated the Denver Broncos 27-10. Shout out to my Cowboys, all right? And in 1997, how could you forget this one?
Missed it. Dennis fights for the rebound. Tapped it out. And it'll belong to Minnesota.
He kicked the cameraman. He was really upset. Really upset. Went up in the air, came down on the camera. You thought he sprained his ankle.
Well, there's all kinds of equipment right there, and the cameraman is hurt.
There's a struggle for it. He comes over here on the cameraman. His steps on the camera. That's what he was upset about.
Now the man acts like he's dying. Dennis says, I didn't do much.
Well, you can almost see the man is in some pain there. You understand that, but you can almost see a dollar bill's floating around there.
Okay, that's got to hurt. That's got to hurt, folks. That video is pretty disturbing. This is when Dennis Rodman, and I tell you what, Dennis Rodman was actually a pretty calm and collected guy when he first started his NBA career, of course, with the Detroit Pistons. Very, you know, very nice and just kind of humble, sane, if you will. And then, you know, it's like as his career just continued with the Bulls and the Spurs and so on and so forth, he just got kind of, you know, off his rocker. And that was a moment where he certainly got off his rocker, where he kicked cameraman Eugene Amosin in the groin, folks. Again, he was with the Bulls. It took place in 1997 on this day in sports. Oh, that had to hurt. All right, 1997, the Seattle Supersonics set an NBA record with 27 steals against the Toronto Raptors. And finally, in 2001, an anonymous bidder paid just over $3 million for a baseball. Now, the ball was the 70th home run hit by Mark McGwire. How about that? Well, that wraps up our Throwback Thursday segment where we took a look at what happened on this day in sports history. Some memorable ones, to say the least. All right, folks, so let's bring our interview for today's show. Now, each and every Thursday, we love to give you guys also a preview of the day's, or I should say the night's, current sports TV sit-down. Now, this week and last night, I got the chance to sit down with a man who has one incredible background when you talk about sports, folks. I mean, he's worked with the NCAA to the NFL, and now he is the athletic director for Okemos High School. And not many people know that this man named Ira Childress actually used to also be a sports broadcaster for TV and radio. So naturally, I started our conversation by talking about that experience in itself.
Well, you know, I went to Fair State University and majored in communication, and had a great opportunity after graduating from Ferris to go on and do an internship at Fox 2 in Detroit. And that was a great time, and really got the broadcast and sports broadcasting bug there. Had a chance to train under some great people at Fox 2, Jennifer the Hammer Hammond,
right,
and also Dapper Dan Miller. So those two are fixtures there in Detroit, and Ryan Field was there as well.
Ryan Field was there as well. MSU alum.
MSU alum, and a guy who works for Fox Sports Detroit for a long time. Now he does a national show on Fox Sports National. Right. And also just a lot of great people. Had a chance to learn under them, and really went off on my own then, and had my own sports talk radio show.
And you also got to cover the biggest sporting event that there is in the Super Bowl, right? Talk about that.
It all kind of fell into place. The Super Bowl was great. It was in Detroit, 2006. Had a chance to cover that. The Seattle Seahawks, the old Seahawks.
Right, exactly.
not the new ones, but the old Seahawks under Mike Holmgren. And also Pittsburgh was there and with the bus and his homecoming, Jerome Bettis, Detroit McKenzie product. And that was just a great Super Bowl, and getting a chance to cover that. And during that time, also remember, that was right along a couple years earlier, I had to get chance to cover the NBA Finals. The Pistons were there against
exactly.
the Lakers in
2004.
So that was great. And then it's funny, ironically, that same year I got a chance to cover the World Series because the Tigers were there. So it all fell into place,
wow,
you know,
right.
Right around that time. But it was a great experience, and there's nothing like being at those games and getting a chance to really see it firsthand.
Yes, certainly. Now, Ira, how did you get out of that business and go into other ventures? And I also want to bring up, of course, your sports consulting firm that you started as well. But first off, how'd you get out of that realm?
Yeah, just, you know, sports broadcasting was a great opportunity for me. But at the time, you know, I wanted to be a little bit more settled and just have something with a little bit more continuity. So I continued working, while I was doing sports broadcasting, at Fair State University as an administrator. I worked in alumni relations, also did a lot of stuff. was a kind of liaison from development, our development office, to our athletic office there, Affairs. And just had a great time doing a lot of different athletic events as administrator at Ferris State University. And then from then on, I got the call in 2008 from the NCAA National Office in Indianapolis. And they said, hey, we want you to come down and potentially work for us. So had a chance to go and be work at the NCAA after leaving Ferris. And that was obviously the highest you can get in college athletics. So that was a great experience.
Wow, you have had your hand in many jars, I tell you that, Ira. Now talk about Children's Sports Consulting. What is it, and what is the aim of it?
Children's Sports Consulting, we really try to help student athletes on a couple of things. One, the whole recruiting process. The recruiting process can be very, very confusing for student athletes and parents. And I can't tell you how many times that myself and or my partner really had a chance to sit down with parents, talk to them on the phone, or talk to student athletes on the phone, and explain the whole process. Because everyone can figure out who the five-star guys. I mean, you know, everyone knows who, and those guys usually have an easy, guys or females, usually have an easier route because everyone's after them. Right. And what we do at Children's Sports Consulting is we work with the people who are under the radar most of the time and really try to help them and their parents get on the radar and or help colleges figure out who are the people that are, you know, under the radar and in small towns or in West Michigan or in places that they aren't seen very much, you know, and that's very important. So we really, really focus on the whole recruiting process. That's one part of Children's Sports Consulting. And the other part of it is that we do what we call career development. Where we go to college campuses and we speak about careers in sports after you graduate.
Okay.
So that's important. And we also talk on some of the do's and don'ts of social media for student athletes and really, hey, don't want to, you know, get caught up in some social media, some negative things on social media. So we talk about that as well. So we do a lot of different lectures on campus. You know, I had a chance with Children's Sports to go to the University of Notre Dame and speak to their football team. We talked about several things. That was actually a presentation on social media. Mm-hmm. Now, Monty Teo wasn't listening.
But
he was there.
Was he there? He was in the room.
Yeah, he was in the room.
How ironic
right? Oh. Right. So, but that was kind of funny. But no, he's actually a good kid. But that was great because you get a chance to really kind of engage with the student athletes and the coaches and kind of tell them, hey, listen, you know, whatever you, our slogan for Children's Sports as far as social media is you are what you tweet.
So
you can say, hey, well, that's not me. I'm really not. Well, that's not what you put out there. Your social media is your broadcast to the world every single day.
Exactly.
So being able to control your brand, manage your brand, those are some of the things we talk to student athletes about with social media at Children's Sports.
That is such an interesting aspect because, okay, other than Manti Te'o, we all know what happened with that situation. What sort of tips do you give athletes out there? And if any are watching right now, I mean, you know, just like you said, because handling yourself in that realm of social media, that is you broadcasting yourself and your own brand to the world. What mistakes do you see student athletes make on social media?
The biggest mistake you can make is engaging with AKA negative fans or haters or, you know, that type of thing. Because what happens is, you know, everyone's on social media. You get people who troll you. They'll say, hey, you know what? You suck or you're terrible. You're this and that.
Everybody gets it.
So if you go back and you engage with them, now they have you. And now you're into a battle. And so now you're saying things you really don't want out there. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. And the other thing is you remember the old-fashioned diary? Mm-hmm. People used to write down their thoughts and all that stuff. Social media is not that. And don't use it as that. And I tell people all the time, if you have a bad day and everyone has them, call a friend. Don't put it out there on Twitter or Facebook or, you know, and put all your problems and your issues and all that out there, because that people don't understand the context of it, and it becomes very, very negative. It puts you in a very, very negative light.
Right.
So I just, you know, I said, just make sure that you, with everything you put out there, is consistent with, one, your values, and two, your overall brand. Because if you're telling me, hey, you know what, I'm a really good person, I have great values, and I'm a really, you know, all these great things, and then I see you out there swearing and putting songs to a lyrics out there on songs, mm-hmm. and they're really vulgar, But that's not lined up with what you told me. And you can tell me, hey, Mr. Childress, I retweeted that. No, well, that's still, I don't know that. That's still you. I'm seeing it, mm-hmm. and that means that you've endorsed it.
Right.
You know,
I mean, right.
if you think it's cool enough to retweet, that means you endorse it. So I tell people all the time, make sure it's lined up with their values and make sure that it's the brand that you want out there.
That is a great message for anybody who's on social media, let alone athletes. Okay, now I want to go into another realm here. Ira, can you talk about how you ventured over to Okemos and became their athletic director, and what has that job been like for you since you've been there?
It's been great. You know, it's one of the premier jobs in the state of Michigan. I'm not ashamed to say that. I mean, it's a great, great job. When I got there, it was a great job, and it's always been a great job because, mm-hmm. one, the big thing about Okemos is that the academics is second to none. You know, I mean, when you talk about Okemos, you're talking about a top 10 academic school nationally.
Right.
I mean, this is not something I'm making up. Anybody who wants to know, just go Google Okemos High School,
it'll pop up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great, great place academically. So that was something that was very attractive to me, knowing that the academics are as high as they are. And then my whole mantra is education or athletics. So that's what really attracted me to Okemos. When I got there, I saw the educational athletics at firsthand, and it's been outstanding. It's been great. It's been fun. It's been busy. I mean, it's a busy job, no doubt about it, because we have 30 different sports to really kind of hone in on, and a lot of schools don't have that many sports. So it keeps you very, very busy. It's very, very high profile job. You know, you're because of the school and because, you know, the teams are so successful. We have some of the best student athletes in the state. And I'm talking about student athletes who are doing well, winning conference championships, winning state championships, winning regional championships, but also have a 4.0 GPA,
right,
and scoring 32, 34, 36 on the ACT. You know, that you see that regularly, and taking AP classes. You know, so that is the big thing about Okemos. It's a great experience from an academic standpoint and a great experience from an athletic standpoint.
So for you taking this job, I mean, knowing that Okemos has always been pretty successful, very successful, above averagely successful academically, I mean, you know, you always want to place that importance on the student aspect of the athlete, because sometimes that gets kind of overlooked and shoved under the rug. It was pretty easy for you to not really have to hone these kids because they were already really successful in the classroom, you know?
Yeah, you know, and don't get me wrong, our coaches still try and do a good job of what we call student-athlete development. We want to really develop the student-athlete holistically,
right,
because, you know, it's one thing to be great in the classroom, and it's another thing to be great on the playing field, but we also want you to be great socially. You know, I mean, that's a big part of, you know, your whole growth. So I give our coaches all the credit in the world. They're doing a great job of developing our student-athlete holistically. So we really have what you call the 360 athlete at Okemos. People who are great in the classroom, student athletes who are great on the playing field, and also student athletes who are great socially. Now, again, you know, they're young people, they're not perfect, but again, we have great support system and great coaches to really help them get to the level they need to get to every single day.
Ira, how did your experience as a former student athlete, you being at Ferris State and playing football there as wide receiver, I mean, how did that experience, looking back at, you know, when you were there, transcend into be able to do your job as very good as an athletic director at Okemos?
One of the things I learned as a student athlete is you're going to have to manage your time. You have to be great at time management. The other thing that I learned is the discipline aspect of it. That was very important. And also the leadership. You know, how do you handle adversity? Because when you're playing out there, I mean, I've been out in some big games and had an opportunity to play for a championship and win the league championship at Ferris State. You know, and to do that, everybody had to come together every single day. And we had to manage adversity. We knew adversity was going to come, but we had to be able to manage that. And that's what we did to win that championship back in 1999. That was great. That was a great opportunity for us to seize that moment, and we did. But during that time, what I learned is, you know what? Through all this, you got to stay focused. You got to maintain that your sense of the sense of the moment, and also you got to go out there and perform at a high level. So those things really helped me, you know, and they were very transferable to the working world when I left the Ferris State University.
Certainly, and you also got a chance to work in the NFL and the NCAA. What did you do there, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, I worked the NCAA and I worked with the NFL, and it was great. I mean, NCAA, I had two different roles. One when I first came in, I was assistant director for diversity and inclusion. And when I was an assistant director for diversity and inclusion, the president then was a guy named Dr. Miles Brand. And I remember him telling me, he said, hey, we hired you because of your football background. And there's some other things we're going to have you do here. But what your focus is going to be is to work with minority football coaches. And we have a lack of minority head coaches in college football Division 1A. And that was the old FBS. That's, you know, the big time, you know, the Big Ten, Pac-10, all those conferences. And so I honed in on that, and I was able to work with those coaches for 3 years, put them through different workshops and all of those things to really help them get to that next level. I mean, I work with David Shaw, who now you see at Stanford as the head coach. I remember going and going over through his whole interview process. He was a part of my programs that I did at the NCAA, and he got the head coaching job at Stanford.
Exactly.
That was big. I worked with James Franklin, that's now at Penn State, that was at Vanderbilt before that. Had a chance to work with Kevin Sumlin, and some of these great minority coaches that you see out there. It's not many. We still got a lot of work to do in that area, but there was my last year there in 2012. We were +5. We had 5 minority coaches hired, and that was the most that we ever had. We had 14 in FBS at that time, and now it's dipped a little bit. I think we're at 13 or 12, something like that. But which is not many. You still, because you got 120. Remember, 120
right, exactly.
Schools.
Yeah.
So that was my original challenge there, and I really loved it, and I took pride in working with a lot of these coaches that you see on the campus. A lot of them are assistants still hoping to get that opportunity. So I really enjoyed that.
All right. Yeah, that is a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV. Sit down with Okemos High School Athletic Director Ira Childress. It was certainly a pleasure sitting down with that man. And as you just heard, I mean, he has a vast amount of experience in every different facets of the sporting world. So, again, catch that episode tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. If that's past your bedtime, make sure you DVR it and check it out during your convenience. So definitely check that out, folks. It's going to be a fantastic sit down. All right. Well, breaking news here, as I just said and discussed about the future of Cardale Jones, the Ohio State quarterback who led Ohio State to, of course, the national championship win 3 days ago. Well, Ohio State QB Cardale Jones said that he will make a, quote, life-changing decision today at 4 p.m. That is 2 hours from now. He actually tweeted it out, life-changing decision at 4 p.m. Now, a source close to the quarterback has revealed that the past 48 hours have been, quote, very stressful for Jones, and noting that a high third-round NFL draft pick could command close to $1 million in guaranteed salary. Cardale, go out there and get your moolah, my man. Do it. I think he will. What do you think, Alex? Now that this news is now broke, again, a 4 p.m. decision, what do you think Cardale is going to do?
If it's life-changing, he's going NFL. Let's
he's going. It. Right, exactly. Anytime a tweet like that comes out, he's got to go. And deservedly so. I mean, anytime you're competing with the likes of Braxton Miller, who was an absolute stud for Ohio State, and then JT Beard, who came right after the Braxton Miller injury and showed that boy can play, Cardale comes in and never misses a beat. Hey, you're a third-string quarterback. You're not guaranteed a starting QB spot with the team next year. Go out there and get that money.
That's so funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
A guy that plays, what, 4 or 5 games is going to be drafted out of his first year.
But I tell you what, you know, he wins the Big Ten championship, then he goes and beats the powerhouse in Alabama, then he goes on the biggest stage in college football, the national championship stage, and wins. I mean, hey, you can't argue with that. The proof is in the pudding, right? So, again, Cardale Jones making his decision at 4 o'clock. All right, folks. Well, unfortunately, we've reached the final minute of our show where we have to say goodbye. But thanks so much to all of you who tuned in to today's Current Sports. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic day, and be easy, people.